All right, listen up. This is Hoxton on Audio Boom. Get your ears working, people.
This week on Double Tap, is the new Star Fox the end of the Wii U?
I sound like an awful pessimist. I kind of think the Wii U is past the point of redemption.
And when girls make games.
When I started asking people, and especially my team, why we couldn't recruit women, I think the overwhelming response was girls don't play games. I don't know, that struck as odd to me because I think girls would be great at making games.
Hello, and welcome to Double Tap. I'm Alice Taplin. In this week's show, producer Jamie Wareham spoke to the head of Girls Make Games, the summer camps that teach girls how to make games, about the impact that their workshops have on girls and their families. But first, on the day of Star Fox Zero's worldwide launch, I'm joined by Nintendo Life's editor Thomas Whitehead by Skype to see if the Star Wars Battlefront-style game will live up to expectations, and if the game would be better off without the Wii U's gamepad.
Now's our chance to honor my father's legacy and restore the Star Fox name. Andross won't be getting his way this time. Let's take the offensive.
Thanks for the save, Star Fox! My Emperor! I failed you!
What in the world?
How many more of these enemies are there?
Andross! Andross?
I've been waiting for you, Star Fox.
I'm going it alone.
Fox! Fox! Go!
I think there's a perception of Star Fox Zero in particular that they're complicating something that was simple before. You know, and introducing new ways to aim and new enemies where you need to, maybe you're flying above them and aim down to hit a weak spot, something like that. I think some opinions are that overcomplicates a simple formula.
Do you think that maybe when they were creating the Star Fox Zero game, that there was maybe more emphasis on just trying to create it and fit it into the gamepad as opposed to creating the game and the storyline and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was announced early 2014 that Shigeru Miyamoto and his team, one of their main focuses at that point was going to be promoting the gamepad and showing what it could do, because the Wii U was struggling at the time and still is. So I think, sure, they were looking at franchises and game experiences they thought could work well in showing off new concepts. And there hadn't been a new Star Fox game in quite a while, and it hadn't been a big selling franchise for a while. And because it's a favorite of Miyamoto as well, probably that all aligns to say, well, let's see what we can do with Star Fox and let's put the gamepad to use in different ways. So I think in many ways, it just came together.
What does the gamepad bring to Star Fox that other iterations of the game didn't have?
In terms of how it changes level designs, you use a combination of motion controls and actually looking at the gamepad screen to control the aiming reticule. Whereas in older games, the reticule would move with your ship, but now they move independently. It takes the shift away from always intensive ship control. Sometimes you're controlling the ship relatively little, and you put it on a path, and then you're aiming at weak spots, and almost like working a gun turret, like something out of, I don't know, the Millennium Falcon or something.
So do you think that having the gamepad might limit the appeal of Star Fox?
And I don't think it's going to be a huge sales success. The Wii U user base is already quite small anyway.
In sort of other things that Nintendo are doing to try and advertise Star Fox, they've got an animated short being released as well. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a really smart thing to do. It surprised me a little. I think it's something Shigeru Miyamoto likes to do a little more nowadays. He kind of did a similar thing with Pikmin 3. You know, these little animated shorts you could buy from the eShop.
The Cornerian army and Andross' forces have been at war for years now, and here you are always joking around.
Because there's nothing to worry about. Corneria's defenses are totally impenetrable. There's no way Andross could think he stands a chance of actually breaking through them. Huh?
Rob, report.
Distress signal received. Communications open.
Star Fox, come in. Do you read me?
General Pepper, what's going on?
Corneria City is under attack from Andross's army.
What is that thing? No, it can't be.
I think a lot of big fans of the series will be tuning in to watch it.
Do you think that is also a way of kind of appealing to a new fan base as well? Because they might watch the short and then go and play the game? Or do you think it's just something for people who are already fans of the series?
I think realistically it'll appeal more to existing fans, because I sound like an awful pessimist, but I kind of think the Wii U is past the point of redemption. It's been out too long and it's sold too few units. It has no momentum. It's not kind of on the radar of a lot of young kids anymore. So I'm sure there are strategy documents in Nintendo's HQ talking about connecting with the young audience, and that makes sense. But I think the animation will probably hit more of a chord with current fans and those with nostalgia for the SNES and N64 games.
So do you think that they might have just done better with this game if they'd have kept it on the DS?
Possibly. I mean, the 3DS already had a Star Fox game. It's like a remake of the N64 one. And again, I don't think it did brilliantly in terms of sales. I think it just did okay. I think part of the problem is that as a franchise, it's just not quite hit the mark with in the last few years, and Nintendo's been a bit erratic with its releases. They haven't maintained it, you know, like Legend of Zelda, Mario, all these franchises where they churn out regular games that's already always at focus, whereas I think with this one, it makes sense to release it on Wii U because it meant they could experiment with the gamepad, and it is a fun game to play. I think existing Wii U owners will enjoy it, and they have said that when it comes to Wii U, all they're trying to do is keep owners happy because they know it's not going to take off and be a big success.
Carrying the Great Fox for support mode. That is the gyro wing, a vehicle built for high-tech utility purposes. Walker functionality engaged.
I'm glad we're on the same team, Fox.
Hurry, Star Fox!
So do you think that maybe if they'd have wanted to actually revive the gamepad, they should have picked one of their more popular franchises to do it with?
Yeah, and they probably should have done it a lot sooner as well. I think the Wii U was actually unlucky. It takes years to develop a console. And when they started, tablets were probably quite small size. But by the time it came out, they'd already become so much more popular and the game had changed. Nintendo has to be careful and not listen to fans too much, because I don't think the fans would have asked for the Wii or the DS for that matter, but they became huge successes. So I think if they can accommodate fans with the sort of games they want while pushing whatever technological idea they have next with their hardware, that'll have to be the way to go, because the hardcore fan base is only ever a few million people. But to have a big success, you need to reach the mainstream public, and that'll be their priority.
Thomas Whitehead, editor of Nintendo Life there. Now it's time for the gaming news with Jamie.
Electronic Arts has announced another delay to Mirror's Edge Catalyst. After what will now be a 4-month delay from its original release date in February, the game will now launch in June 7th in North America and June 9th in Europe. After PC game The Park's wide success, it's going to be launching on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One on May the 3rd. The horror game, which is set in a creepy amusement park, will be Funcom's first console release since 2006. And YouTube star Felix Schellberg, aka PewDiePie the Let's Play YouTuber, has made Time's magazine list of the 100 most influential people. In an essay for Time, South Park creator Trey Parker called Schellberg the Pied Piper of YouTube and said that gaming videos on the internet are the birth of a new art form. And in the esports, 8 people have been arrested in South Korea following an investigation into match-fixing in the StarCraft II pro tournament scene. According to a report by the Changwon Regional Prosecution Service, one player received 70 million won, which is around $62,000, to intentionally lose matches. 4 brokers and 2 financial backers were also charged. And Bora Kim, otherwise known as Yellow Star, has left the Team Solomide roster. It's after competing in North America. The French player has said that he has a desire to return to Europe. Team Solomide are now holding open tryouts to replace him.
Just as many women play games as men, and yet less than a quarter of video game professionals are women. Girls Make Games want to change that, with international summer camps, workshops and games jams. Producer Jamie spoke to founder of Girls Make Games, Leila Shabir, about inspiring young girls to have the confidence to break into a male-dominated industry. He started by asking which is her favourite of the games that the girls have made, which are actually created and available to buy.
Well, currently my two favourites are the two winners from 2014 and 2015. They're both very character-driven. So 2014, the game's called The Whole Story. Whole as in H-O-L-E. It's very punny, very cute, and very, there's a lot of riddles to solve. So you act as you start out as a little girl in her backyard. You're digging for stuff because you're a budding archaeologist, and your best friend is this cute shovel. And you find a time capsule that sends you back in the medieval times, and you know, you look just like a lost princess at that time. So everyone mistakes you for the the princess. Even her parents can't tell that you're not their daughter. And the king and the queen just, you know, they're like, okay, go back to your room, this and that. And now she has to escape the castle. And she sets on a journey where she has to go find the princess because otherwise she's trapped in the castle. So along the way, she meets all these unicorns and trolls and all these things that the girls came up with, and everyone asks her riddles and questions, and she has to go on quests and solve them, otherwise she can't progress in the game. So, as you can see, there's a lot of, you know, underlying themes in here. It's still a princess that needs rescuing, but a girl is rescuing her. So there's definitely things that exist in the world right now, and that games that exist like this, but not exactly from a girl's perspective. The second game that I'm really fond of is the 2015 winner. It's a comedy slash horror game where you play as this girl, Alice, who is like a budding detective. She, unfortunately, everywhere she goes, ends up, you know, falling asleep, and when she wakes up, everyone around her is dead. So there's a mystery. Yeah, so the game literally starts within the first 3 seconds. Her sister dies, and her sister is the only family she has. So it's very dark, very Tim Burton-esque. It's, I don't want to give a lot of it away because it's under production right now.
I think like any new project, it always comes about to fill a void. So kind of like, what is that void for Girls Make Games? Like, why did you start?
We launched our own educational game studio, and we were building a team. So when I started asking people, and especially my team, why we couldn't recruit women, they just, you know, I think the overwhelming response was girls don't play games. I don't know, that struck as odd to me because games are so imaginative. I think girls would be great at making games. So we set out to do a little experiment in the Bay Area. The first summer camp was supposed to be just sort of a data collection thing for us where we would figure out whether girls play games and what kind of games they play and what we can learn from them. But it ended up becoming something a lot bigger than that, and now we're actually dedicated full time to it because people just responded to it so positively. Everyone around the country and actually around the world, literally we got emails saying, thank you for starting this program. My daughter would love to attend. She feels like an outsider among her peers, and she would love your camp. Please bring it to our city.
And I think that says a massive thing about the demand for this. It's such a small, you know, like literally like a light bulb, tiny moment, goes national and international so quickly.
It's such a specific thing, you know, making games, and only girls of a particular age group making games, and there are still so many of them that we never hear about or think about, you know.
But you, I mean, you say it's specific, but I mean, there's a lot of talk over in the UK and about whether the curriculum should teach young people how to code and how to program and to understand, you know, the growing technology that is around us all of the time. How important is that? Would you like to see kind of coding in the curriculum?
It's very odd that we don't teach that in school because, you know, it is the next literacy that we need after learning English. How do you communicate with a computer? I mean, look at our lives. You and I are talking through a computer right now. Most of our days are spent interacting with digital devices, and it's really important to learn how to communicate with them. So for the generations coming, it's very important. And I think there's definitely a wave now, finally. Four states have just signed in the US to include computer science. But I think definitely we need a lot more, and we need to start earlier. I think what we're working on right now is, you know, our camps are very, very physical and very geographical. So if you're, let's say, in London, we're missing out on all these girls in other cities. And, you know, once a year, that camp, that's not enough. So we're working on a digital curriculum that we can send out to IT teachers around the world, and they can teach it in their school. It's important to empower more teachers so they can empower more students.
And it sounds like a massive part of your project is that element of empowering.
It's such a validation coming to camp, meeting all these other girls and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not a weirdo. I'm not the outsider. Look at all these others. And I am an insider at 12, you know, 11, 12. That's a really big deal to you. And that can mold it, you know, mold who you become as you grow up.
It meant so much to our daughter to be able to ask questions and to be taken seriously by adults who actually work in the field. By Friday night, she told us that we were very fortunate to live in Silicon Valley.
So we actually had two specific, one who came in with severe shyness, so she would not even look up to talk to you. She looked at the ground the whole time. At our camps, towards the end, we start teaching presentation and public speaking because they have to pitch their game to the judges. And so we were just like, oh my God, she's definitely not going to go on stage. She can't even talk one-on-one. But by the end of it, she went up on stage. She even did a little dance, and we didn't have to ask her to go on stage. She said, I want to go on stage.
Kristen really loved the camp. You've had a significant impact on her interests and career goals. Sure, prior to camp, she was an enthusiastic user of games on her phone. But on the night she came home from camp, she was able to successfully persuade us that she needed access to games at home so she could better understand the market.
So that was one story where her mom, like towards the end, was just like, her mom broke down. She was crying. She was like, I've never seen my daughter so happy. And I've never seen my daughter express herself in front of people.
And how did you feel? I mean, seeing the mum cry about, you know, how confident you made her daughter.
I'm a big softie, so I cry all the time. I cried this past weekend. We had a 2-day workshop, and one parent started, like, mom started tearing, and I was like, okay, I'm right with you. So I was crying too. But it's because it's so overwhelming, you know? I didn't start this thinking that people would be touched. People already go to places to learn. They go to school. So it's just really overwhelming that a place where they go for 15 days or 2 days or 10 days can change them. And it's a lot of happiness, but I also feel very, very, very responsible now every time we think about the camp experience and how we change things and the staff we hire. We're very, very, very careful because these are actual minds that you're working with.
And if you want to find out more about Girls Make Games or get involved with one of their camps, then head on over to girlsmakegames.com. Thanks to Thomas Whitehead, editor of Nintendo Life, and Layla Shabir, founder of Girls Make Games. This has been Double Tap. See you next week.
Double Tap is an Audio Boom production written and presented by Alice Taplin.